today's episode, we're going to talk about HRT and vaginal dryness in menopause. I'm Dr. Davidson from Progress Your Health.
And I'm Dr. Mackey from Progress Your Health.
So if you're new here, we talk all about HRT, menopause, perimenopause, pretty much anything that has to do with hormone imbalance. And we've gotten so many questions lately. I would say we have a whole thick list of questions from listeners of the podcast. So we're going to go over a question from a podcast listener.
Yeah, this question is from Cindy. Now, granted,
change everybody's names.
There's a theme to the questions, but there's always a little bit of a different way to approach each one. That's why these questions are so interesting, both for you and I. They're sort of fun to play around with, because women are all doing relatively sort of the same type of replacement, just kind of diving into the detail and kind of tweaking it as we would with our own patients. So why don't you go ahead and read Cindy's question.
So let me grab my glasses here. So this is a question from Cindy. Now she's taking some hormones and she's wanting some guidance on what she's doing and also with some of the symptoms she's having. So, hi, I am 52 currently and on testosterone cypionate, 200 milligrams per 1 ml, injecting 0.06 once a week. I'm on progesterone 200 milligrams orally and biased a 50-50 ratio of 1 milligram per day. I came off of pellets to this regime now. I was doing fine until the past 3 months, all of a sudden got back my vaginal dryness pretty bad. My testosterone had gotten pretty high at 334 from my normal 219 because the compounding pharmacy gave me depo testosterone instead of my normal cypionate. I know the depo is just a brand name, but it really threw everything off. I've since stopped the depo, went back on my cypionate now for the past month. With that said, I'm still having vaginal dryness. Do you think it could be due to the testosterone being dominant, or do you think I need to up my bias cream? I do use and have used estriol vaginal cream for years, and it's not helping. I tried one night doing 1.5 pumps of my bias cream, and the next day I did have more discharge. Any help is greatly appreciated.
Yeah, so she goes through quite a few different things here. She goes from pellets back to not only a combination of bias, but also using an injectable testosterone. Anytime you're using cypionate or the depo she mentions, that's always going to be an injectable. What are your thoughts in general about using injectable testosterone?
You know, yeah, to kind of clear away and just talk about that point first, we are going to get into the vaginal dryness. I do feel like the injections for women can cause so many side effects. Now, granted, she's only doing, if you do the math here, about 12 milligrams of testosterone, but it's only one time per week. What I find with women is really, you know, I hedge away from the injections because you can get this huge bolus of testosterone in your system, hence that's why it's up there at 334. Of course, we don't know when she tested, so as soon as she does the injection, that testosterone level is going to go really high, but then it's going to come down until she does her next injection. So it's really kind of having these kind of mountains and valleys of testosterone that I don't feel like it's really stable enough. I tend to like to do testosterone at more of a transdermal as a cream and then doing it either daily or maybe as minimal as 5 days or 3 days a week, but really I feel like keeping the level more even, you have better symptom relief, and then you don't have some of the negative side effects of having too much testosterone.
Yeah, you know, I see the once-a-week injection with men. That's a very common, you go to a hormone replacement clinic for men, and they're either doing it once a week or twice a month. I don't necessarily agree with that either. Certainly for men, for women, it just seems like they're just repeating the same process there. Mm-hmm. And I would agree with you. I mean, granted, you and I almost routinely use transdermal creams. What are your thoughts? She came off pellets and now she's got a new regimen. What are your thoughts of using pellets?
You know, the same thing. You insert the pellet, the levels go really high, and then you got to wait it out till they come back down before you replace that pellet. Some women, if they have a lot of symptoms from having too much hormone from that pellet, there's really nothing you can do except sort of wait it out. So I do feel like that kind of like, is again, having that bunch of the hormones and then it comes down and then you get another pellet injection or another pellet placed, you know, into your upper rump there. It's still, it might seem easy in theory because you don't have to do anything other than getting, you know, a little pellet, mm-hmm. you know, surgically put in your rump there. But at the same time, I don't I don't think it really has a finesse of hormone replacement, because hormone replacement therapy is really, there's science behind it, but then it's also an art to find the right treatment protocol that's going to fit for each particular person. Everybody's on a different hormone regimen. You know, I'm on my hormone regimen, which I can get into later about what I'm doing, you know, at 51. And then, you know, here for Cindy, she's on her own personal regime. So we want to find that uniqueness there, where I feel like doing the pellets or doing the injections, you don't really get that finesse.
So she doesn't say anything here, but I'm assuming that she says, I came off pellets. So we could assume there that her pellet regimen was just testosterone only. Or do you think hers was a combination?
It might have been a combination between the estrogen and the testosterone, but the way she words it, well, no, it could have been a combination of the estrogen and the testosterone. And then they usually do that as a pellet, and then they take the progesterone orally separately, especially if they have a uterus. What I find with a lot of women is after a while, they kind of get, they don't really want to have it put in anymore. It's kind of a process to have, you know, have a little scalpel slice in your upper rump and putting, you know, injecting that pellet in there. I know that that gets a little annoying. I've had some women that have had some, you know, some bleeding and some infection from it. And then a lot of women that haven't, it just was like one more thing to do that was not the most comfortable thing to do. So I'm thinking probably that's why she switched it up here. The testosterone, just on a side note, let's talk about testosterone a little bit. In women, when the testosterone therapy is too high, you'll have negative side effects.
Almost invariably, yeah. That's one where you have to be a little careful, especially when you first start using it. That's why those pellets sometimes can be a little of a roll of the dice. You're not sure how that woman's going to respond. Is she going to have a favorable response and she's going to feel great? Or is she going to have a bunch of anxiety and, you know, her face is going to break out because the testosterone's too high?
Yeah, that was my thought, is what symptoms have you seen with somebody that, with a female having too much testosterone therapy?
Well, like I said, they go both directions. Some feel amazing for that first 3 to 6 months. Some don't feel very good. There's, you know, I don't know percentage-wise, because you and I don't deal with the actual, implanting the pellets ourselves. So we sort of see the...
Oh, I meant regardless, any high testosterone, you know, just so our listeners can understand, if they're getting too much testosterone, what would be their symptoms?
Oh, sure. Yeah. Breakouts for sure. And anxiety are probably the two most common.
Yeah. I would say definitely, you know, acne. I mean, you start some testosterone therapy, you're going to get maybe a pimple here or there, but not getting a lot. I've had women having acne all up and down their neck, where you normally don't get breakouts there.
Right, like
you said, I would like to circle back around to the anxiety. I think people don't realize when you have high levels of testosterone, it can make you very anxious.
Yeah,
not necessarily testy. I wouldn't say I see that too much.
Yeah, I don't think women are getting roid rage from using their pellets.
No, but I would say the anxiety, hair loss, that's a big one.
Sure.
Just hair shedding, coming out. I mean, we all lose hair, especially if you've got long hair like me. And when you wash it, but like really a lot, maybe even a little bit of thinning on the top, thinning on the temples, because that would be considered androgen-derived hair loss. That's a common symptom. I wish I could say that the higher the testosterone, the higher the sex drive.
Yeah.
But it doesn't really work that way. Estrogen really is about the sex drive. I mean, adding in some testosterone can be beneficial for libido, but I wouldn't say the higher it is, you know, the higher the sex drive. But I do...
In some ways, the higher the testosterone, at least for a woman, the higher the testosterone on lab tests, the lower the libido or sex drive. It almost has like the reverse effect. If they maintain those levels, especially with the pellets, if they maintain those levels too high for too long, you think they'd have a raging libido, and maybe they do for a little bit of time, you know, weeks to months, and then it starts to fade after that, which is why you and I have never really been too big of fans of the pellets in general.
No. But, you know, testosterone, I like to do the transdermal cream and find that balance, find the balance with the estrogen, find the balance with the progesterone. Yeah. That's really beneficial for libido and then other symptoms of perimenopause and menopause. But I would, like I said, I did want to circle back to that anxiety. So you too notice that when women's levels of testosterone are too high, they get anxious?
Yeah, they just feel, you know, like there's almost like they're, you know, now you get this sometimes with thyroid replacement, you get this with other things, but, you know, they have this feeling like they're kind of buzzing inside, you know, like they're internally agitated and they can't really quite put their finger on it, you know, or they just have full-blown anxiety, especially if they're a little bit prone to it. Now, or if they're not prone to it, all of a sudden now they've had, you know, pellets put in or injection, all of a sudden they turn right back around and they have, you know, some kind of issue. You know, it's a pretty easy cause and effect that way, especially if they're not prone to the anxiety. Mm-hmm. And the anxiety piece, I think, is one that is not necessarily talked about ahead of time. Certainly the skin, the breakouts, you know, all that kind of stuff, the physical things, but the emotional piece on the, you know, like not so much anger and frustration, more so just feeling, you know, anxious and kind of wound up a little bit.
That's interesting because back when I was working a lot with PCOS or women with polycystic ovarian syndrome, I would notice those women that had the higher testosterone, because that's one of the hallmarks of PCOS is the higher androgens, is they did have like this anxiety that you don't necessarily see. And that was like one of the biggest things we wanted to treat. Of course, we want to treat all the symptoms of PCOS, but the anxiety component, because trust me, I have a little anxious nature, don't I? That's just my personality. It's not fun to feel anxiety.
No. It's especially for those ones that have never had it before, then it's sort of like they don't want to go through that again. Because, and once you get the pellets put in, you can't do nothing about it. Those pellets are there, you know, for months in order for those hormone levels to sort of drop off. So you're sort of backing yourself into a corner. Now, I've heard other women say the women that actually like pellets, they don't have anything to do once they're implanted. Mm-hmm. There's no upkeep. There's no daily maintenance. That's where I think, there's trade-offs, right? There's no free lunch. The less there is to do from a compliance perspective, now there's going to be a trade-off in some other capacity. And that is the tweaking of those levels over time, especially if a woman is just starting a particular hormone regimen. You start at a certain place. You and I have been doing this for a long time. You start one place, but you end up in a different destination. And it's always easier just to kind of ease your way into that as opposed to doing something that's relatively permanent for a period of time.
So just wanted, I know we kind of digressed from Cindy's question here, but I did want to talk a little bit about testosterone therapy. One thing that she's kind of asking here is, having her testosterone levels go up because she went from the cypionate to the depo and maybe she was absorbing it better, her levels went up. Is that what is causing the vaginal dryness? And I wouldn't necessarily say too much testosterone can, you know, in theory, there's these theories that, you know, testosterone as a chemical structure or as a molecule looks very similar to estradiol. They're almost like mirror images. Mm-hmm. I think they're missing a hydroxy group or something like that, that testosterone can stimulate the estradiol receptors and create, you know, some kind of reaction from that. I've always heard that as in theory, especially, you know, 20 years ago, but I haven't really seen testosterone necessarily like block the estrogen receptor.
It does not get converted.
Maybe in men, when men are taking testosterone, it can convert and aromatize and become estradiol. So that's one molecule converting over, but I wouldn't say that the testosterone somehow blocking her estradiol to create the vaginal dryness. I think that might have been just, maybe it was just, it just happened. I wouldn't say that. I think maybe her vaginal dryness actually is probably because her estrogen's too low.
Yeah, so that makes me think, that's why I asked you the question earlier, that makes me think the pellets had estradiol in it. And now the pellets have sort of worn off. She's gone to a transdermal cream, 50-50 biased, at only 1 milligram. Now her testosterone was 334, has gone down to 219. The time of testing does matter there. Mm-hmm. You know, if she's at 334 the day after injection, her number is going to be quite a bit different if it's 7 days later. I think it's really nothing to do with the testosterone as far as the vaginal dryness. I think it's the switch from the pellets to a relatively very low dose of biased.
Because I know that she said she was doing fine for the last 3 months. So she must have had the pellets a while back, started this new regime for the last 3 months. And then why is this happening after 3 months? You'd think, oh, well, the pellets were out 3 months. Why didn't this happen 3 months ago? But the body's really interesting that it might have even taken that time for those, you know, for the body to respond, knowing that that estrogen's lower. Like, yeah. I guess what I'm trying to say is when I've had women have full hysterectomy, so they have their uterus and their ovaries out, they don't really get a lot of menopausal symptoms. That would be considered surgical menopause. Let's say they have them out, they don't have any hormones just yet, they don't get that the surgical menopause or the menopausal symptoms till about 8 weeks after having that total hysterectomy or oophorectomy and hysterectomy. Why wouldn't they have that within the 8 weeks? It's something about the body having to say, oh, you know, there's a change here. It takes a little while for things to happen. So I'm thinking, you're right, she stopped the pellets, there was some estradiol in the pellets that somehow is now showing up 3 months later that her estrogen's too low. Because just as, you know, like you said, we've been doing this forever, is a biased of 50-50 milligrams, so 50-50 ratio of 1 milligram of biased means that there is 0.5 5 milligrams of estradiol and 0.5 milligrams of estriol. That honestly is a pretty low dose for a full 24-hour period.
Yeah, that this is the trend that we see all the time. We get all these questions, and the thing that is resounding over and over and over, women are trying to figure out where their dosing is, and it's always too little of a biased dose, almost every time. Yeah. Now, we're going to talk about one, probably another episode or the one after, about using the patch, which is seems like an even a lower dose than 1 milligram. You know, we'll talk about that one on the next one. But that, 1 milligram, 50-50. So it would have been really nice to know, this is where the blood work actually plays a good role, mm-hmm. what her estradiol level was on the pellet, where I'm assuming, and based on what she's written here, I'm assuming that the pellet had estradiol in it. When those pellets first came out, what have they been around now? What, probably a decade?
No, maybe 20 years. 50, I remember back years? In 20 or 2004.
Okay. Yeah. So they've been around a long time.
They've been around
for a while. They used to only be testosterone only. They never used to have an estradiol component. That didn't come until later. That it was just testosterone in the early days of pellet implantation. And then I think probably in the last 10 years, it's been testosterone and estradiol.
Yeah. We went to a workshop for that, and that was back in like 2008. So maybe it has been around a little longer. Yeah. That had the estradiol in
it. Okay, so 2008, so but I know before that it was testosterone only. At least I think so. That is a long time ago, so I could be wrong. But
can you believe it's going to be 2025?
Yeah. So the fact that she was fine with the pellets is a good thing. That's why it would have been nice to know what her estradiol level was then. I guarantee you, it's a lot lower now.
Well, that would be the thing right now is check her estradiol level. It's probably
on 1 milligram, her estradiol level is going to be less than 30.
I'm surprised she's not having other symptoms like hot flashes, let alone just the vaginal dryness here. So I would say for Cindy and somebody that might be resonating, with her symptom picture, or maybe, what she's doing here, is really she needs to increase up that estrogen, increase up the biased, do it twice a day. I know that was a common practice a long time ago to just do biased once a day. Biased really does not have a longevity for a full 24-hour period. You put it on, at 8 o'clock in the morning, it's going to be pretty much worn off by 8 to midnight later that evening, that you really want to do it twice a day. So I would encourage Cindy to raise up her dose and then do it twice a day.
Yeah, right. Now, she also mentions that she's used, she says estradiol cream. When you read the question, you said estriol.
I thought maybe it was a misspelling. It's estriol doll that she wrote, E-S-T-R-I-D-O-L. So I'm thinking she's meant estriol.
I thought the other way. I thought she meant estradiol. Either way, she says it doesn't work for her, but we don't know what the dosage is. We don't know how frequently she's been using it, because you can't use biased transdermally and it really have a significant impact on the vaginal tissue.
I think it depends on the person. So some people, they do just fine with a biased. They put on maybe on their inner thigh and their vaginal tissues, they don't have any dryness or atrophy. And then there's other ones where their levels of estradiol are pretty good in their bloodstream, but they're having, like you said, vaginal dryness.
Yeah. Then you have to, then you have your systemic dosage, but then you have one for a localized approach. And that's where, she says estradiol, you thought estriol. It says estradiol. She says she's used
kind of a combination of both.
She's used biased. She tried biased a couple of times, which would be a combination, as you said earlier, of estriol and estradiol. We don't like to use estradiol vaginally. We like to just use straight estriol.
But she's saying that
hasn't worked before. What do you think is going on there? Do you think it's a frequency issue or a dosing issue?
Probably both. So the reason I don't like, and I know you don't either, like to put estradiol on the vaginal tissues, is if you have a uterus, that can thicken the lining of the uterus and cause bleeding. Where estriol, and there's some receptors in the uterus, I can't remember, beta, alpha, something like that, that the estradiol actually simulates those receptors and causes thickening of the uterine lining, which can be a risk for uterine cancer or cause periods or spotting, or and can even, cause all sorts of, chronic spotting. So that's why I don't use the estradiol vaginally, and I know you don't either. But the estriol, which is weaker, doesn't have the effect or stimulate whatever alpha beta cells are in the or receptors in the uterine lining, so you don't get that thickening of the lining. So it's less of a it doesn't have the risk factors that estradiol does. But because it's a little weaker, it, like you said, it's probably the frequency and the dosage just isn't enough.
Yeah, I sort of answered the question for you. But so normally if it's returned, and for a woman in menopause, if you're not using something locally like that and you are in menopause or in that transition, you can't use the cream something like temporarily and or use it for a while, stop it, because the issue will return because there's no hormones on the back end of that. So you can't. You sort of have to maintain those tissues for as long as possible. So we usually recommend every night for a week to 10 days, maybe 2 weeks. And then from there, women know their body better than anyone. They can start to reduce the frequency. And what would you say average, let's say we normally use 2 milligrams per gram of estriol. What do you say the average frequency is per month that a woman would use, or per week that a woman would use it?
I like to do between 2 to 4 milligrams of estriol, E3, 2 times a week, maybe 3 times a week. And what I find, and I'm sure you find too, as late as it's like one more thing to do, a lot of women will tell me they haven't been using it. And I'll say, well, are your vaginal tissues dry? And they'll say, yes. And I say, that's because you haven't been using it. And so it's like trying to create that habit, trying to create that habit with women. I do a little stronger dose, and I know you do too, and a little more frequency if there's urinary incontinence. Sure, everybody, you cough, you do some jumping jacks, there's going to be a little leakage. That's pretty normal, or you can feel that. But for a lot of women, sometimes, just going for a walk, they have leakage. They go shopping if they, and if they need to know where a bathroom is, like right away, because that urethra just gets a little lax. And estriol is actually really nice at tonifying that urethra, just to kind of help with urinary incontinence. So it does kind of, I guess maybe I'm making it too detailed, it does kind of depend on the person and what we're working towards. But I'd say for vaginal dryness, vaginal atrophy, that, 2 times a week, 2 times a week.
Well, and it's interesting. So she says she tried the Biest cream, but how much did she use? So if you're using Biest, most...
Where does it say that?
She said she tried vaginally. She said estradiol in the past, it didn't work. And then she said she tried the Biest. So most women are going to be using a TopiClick, right? That's pretty standard across the board.
Or the pump, like it looks like she's using that little pumper.
How do you know she's using a pump?
Since I increased one night to 1.5 pumps of my Biest cream, and she had a little vaginal discharge the next day. And that can happen too, because like I said, some women are, they're more, their uterine linings or their vaginal tissues, everybody is different. But I would say, like you were saying about Cindy, that doing the estriol, doing a little higher dose, doing a little bit more frequency, and then increasing up her Biest.
Yeah.
Just systemically.
Sure. Yeah, you're right. I saw the pumps there. So, clicks versus pumps, that usually translates how many clicks you're using, how many pumps you're using, usually translates to a very specific amount, a very specific dosage. So knowing how much she's using, you can usually kind of, do the math and figure out. Now, you want to be a little bit careful with the frequency and how much you're using vaginally, but like you said, you kind of have to use enough given the situation.
Yeah, of the estriol. The estriol, I feel safe with. I wouldn't want her to put estradiol in her vaginal tissues because she definitely probably has a uterus, because she didn't say anything about that. And then when she says, I used 1.5 pumps of my Biest, she's on a 50-51 milligram, so that was probably 1.5 milligrams of the Biest, which would be 0.75 estradiol, 0.75 estriol. That's a little bit more, and she did notice a difference, so that probably would be helpful.
Yeah. It just probably needs, she seems like she sort of backed off a little bit, but she'd probably need to maintain that for a little while. But that's where we don't use the estradiol. So if there is a little bit of frequency that's necessary, it doesn't, it's not going to make any, it's not going to solve one problem and then turn around and create another problem, because now you're bleeding on the back end of that.
What do you think? So testosterone injections, testosterone itself, especially for men, is like a thick, it's so thick, you have to use a really big needle, especially. It's like kind of scary if you're scared of needles. But why do you think she's using the testosterone cypionate as an injection as opposed to not mixing it with her estrogen or doing it as a testosterone?
Yeah, I wonder that. I've seen a few women over the years that are using testosterone, not a lot, but using testosterone injections. For the amount of testosterone that a woman actually can use without developing any of the side effects we talked about, hair growth, acne, all that stuff, I'm not really sure why they would be given testosterone injections. Because you figure, so you said, well, you did the math here. So, so you figured hers is about 12 milligrams, which over a week doesn't sound like a lot.
No.
You wouldn't want to give a woman 12 milligrams a day. Right? That'd be a lot. So what would you say for your patients, what is the average testosterone dose that you give them?
I mean, there are some that have pretty higher levels, close to 10 to 12 to even a little higher than that. But for the average, for most women, they do about five.
Yeah.
You know, five a day. So, you know, if she maybe even like 2.5 sometimes to 5 milligrams daily, sometimes I'll split that up to twice a day. Testosterone's pretty good at kind of staying in the system, that I usually just do it once a day if we're going to do it. You know, just depends on the person. I'm wondering if maybe, because there are some other practitioners out there, or some other thoughts I've noticed, people maybe on social media are talking about it. They're worried about the testosterone having an effect of getting on other people or other animals, you know.
Sure.
But, you know, as a female, it's not a lot of testosterone. And then you can put it on the inner thigh or, you know, the back of your knee, that's not going to really transfer to anybody. And I'll tell you right now, as a female, you know, if I took testosterone cream and put it on my inner thigh and it got on you, the amount of that testosterone is so small compared to what you make as a man.
Sure. You know? Now, comparing that to children and pets, right? Mm-hmm. That could be a big deal. Even, you know, a couple of milligrams.
Estrogen. You wouldn't want to transdermal estrogen. You wouldn't want to get that on your kids or your pets.
That is one issue that has come up, but she's doing transdermal estrogen versus, you know, so I don't know. I think it must be practitioner preference. Mm-hmm. You know, for some reason why they choose the injectable. You know, I know injectable testosterone is relatively cost effective. You know, right? That's another possibility, but nobody likes to inject that needle.
She could be, you know, testosterone does help with athletic performance and building muscle if you're working out.
No doubt.
I wish if you put it on that you built muscle just putting it on, but you got to, you know, do the exercise to build the muscle. So maybe, you know, we don't know a lot about Cindy here. Maybe she's, you know, an avid exerciser or working on fitness competitions.
Now this is something. Her number. She said her numbers were pretty high at 334 when she went to the depot testosterone. Now it's down to 219. She says my normal 219, which is not technically a normal number, right? That's still a relatively high number. You know, but she must feel good at that number, or at least in the past she's felt good at that number. But that, you know, what is a reference range for testosterone for a woman in menopause? You know, it goes up
ridiculous.
To about six. It goes all like to 60.
No, it goes 2 to 45 at one lab, and then you're right. There's another lab, so it'll say like 7 to 65. That's a really big reference range. I always think, who made that up? Like, made up 2 is normal, and so is 40. You know, it's just, so testosterone is one of those which I do feel is more individualized. So if, you know, maybe this number is good for Cindy. Maybe she's an exerciser. I have a lot of women that tell me, well, the testosterone may not be. We wish it was great for the libido, but really that's about the estrogen. But testosterone, I had a woman actually we were talking to, and it makes so much sense because I've heard this over and over, helps them get their to-do list done. Like it helps them get their stuff done.
Well, no, like I said, we don't know much about her lifestyle, you know, as far as her, exercise on a weekly basis, but I do like to see a higher testosterone level, maybe not 334. That's probably a little bit higher than it needs to be. But she said she didn't feel great at that level anyways. But from an athletic performance perspective, and women, all women that are in their 40s, 50s, and 60s and beyond need to be concerned about preserving muscle mass, potentially even building muscle mass, because it does not get any easier. It's hard enough for men to make muscle in their 40s and 50s, let alone a woman making muscle in their 40s and 50s. So having a higher testosterone level to kind of, you know, push that, instead of the push always being towards weight loss, which I can understand, obviously, especially now with all the injectables on that side that are really popular, the GLP-1s, there's a problem there is because now you're sacrificing your muscle tissue at the same time. And if you're in your 50s, you are not going to get that muscle back unless you're doing something very specifically to try to either preserve what you have or actually try to build it. And you cannot build muscle in a caloric deficit. It is just relatively next to impossible. You know, so I do like to see numbers like that as long as those cosmetic things are not really showing up, the hair loss, the hair growth, and the blemishes. And
like I said, the anxiety.
Yeah. And then on that, you know, like I said, on that more emotional side. So it looks like her main symptom, though, which is interesting, her main symptom is the vaginal dryness. Mm-hmm. I don't think the testosterone plays too much of a role on that one. But like I said, we've talked about the estriol issue, which we'll probably talk about it a million more times just because it comes up a lot. But, you know, these the tendency or the type of question that she's asking based on what she's doing, you know, there's a theme to all of them. They all come in sort of the same way, which is interesting.
So I would love to see Cindy's blood work. Anybody that wants to write in questions, we love it. We've been getting so many questions lately. But if you did have any references to any blood work you've had done, I love all the number and the math stuff.
Sure, sure. Yeah, that's why, like I said, in her case, it'd be nice to see what hers was before when she's on the pellets versus now. Because if her level is less than 30 and now she's back to having some vaginal dryness when she didn't have any for a while, based on what she's using now, of course, there's a significant drop off there.
Or even, I would love to see her estradiol level, but even the FSH, the follicle stimulating hormone, I like to do that.
I'm sure her number is really high. I'm sure when she's on the pellets, it was really low, probably less than 10. And then now that she's off the pellets or the pellets have sort of degraded, now her level is probably back up to, you know, close to 100 where it was before. Mm-hmm. Would be my guess anyways. Yeah. I mean, do you concur, doctor?
I concur. Yeah. Do I concur?
Okay.
All right. I think we...
I don't think there's anything else to say about this one. I think this one, we haven't done one of these in a while, so it's nice to kind of get back in the groove of actually recording video. You know, there's a lot to, you know, to put one of these together, even one. You know, it takes a little bit of kind of behind-the-scenes preparation, but once we sit down and actually start doing it, it's actually pretty fun. So hopefully everyone is enjoying the podcast, the videos. We are now entering into putting some of our clips onto social media, which is, you know, a little bit, you know, scary. And
have an Instagram page. Yeah, can you believe it?
Yeah, yeah. So we're going to keep doing more of it. We're just learning as we go. So if you have any questions or comments, certainly this is going to be on YouTube. So down below, we monitor that as close as we can. And, we'll just keep producing more content. So do you have anything else to add? Are we okay for now?
I think we're good.
Okay. Until next time, I'm Dr. Mackey.
And I'm Dr. Davidson.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.